Welcome to episode 27 of The Courage to Be the Difference. I'm your host, Sherry Ruskus, founder of the Victory Circles, an organization who empowers entrepreneurs to fully bring their business to life and keep them growing in ways that, as this podcast talks about, makes a difference. We each have a path that we travel on every day. Sometimes we get the rug pulled out from under us, and then we have two choices. The first choice is to curl into the fetal position and just block the world out. The second choice is to grab the problem or situation, as hard as it might be, and make the proverbial lemonade out of the lemons that we've been handed. Sometimes matters come from out of nowhere, as is the case with today's guest, Julie Schrell, one of the co-founders of the Be the Difference Foundation. It was Julie's out-of-the-blue diagnosis of ovarian cancer that was her game changer and led her to co-found this nonprofit organization with three other women, Helen Gardner, Jill Bach, and Lynn Lintshear, who were also diagnosed with this horrific disease. We are calling this episode Being the Difference. Let's listen now to what Julie had to share with me. Good morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Sherry?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. And you know, it's amazing because the name of this the podcast I named after your organization because you guys inspired me so much. So the name of this podcast is The Courage to Be the Difference. And you got, I'm going to get choked up just talking about it.
Touch of my heart. I mean,
So it's really about this courage, right? And so much courage is involved in what you guys are doing in your organization. And my first question for you right out of the gate here is, bring us to the moment when the words ovarian cancer first entered into your life.
You know, it's so funny because it was never even on my radar. My grandmother had had breast cancer, so I was always so scared I was going to have breast cancer. So I never even, and honestly, ovarian cancer was an old lady's disease, so that was never anything I would think about. And I started having these things that are now symptoms. And I finally went to the doctor, and he did a CA125, and that's a blood test that is like a cancer antigen, and it was elevated. Not really high, but higher than it should be and definitely cause for concern. And so after seeing a couple of gynecological oncologists, everyone decided I needed a hysterectomy because my ovaries were enlarged, weird shaped. I had fibroids in my uterus, and they're like, you're old enough, you're not having more kids, time to get it out. So I woke up. And right before I went in, I was like, I told everyone, I said, if it's cancer, do not tell my mom, because my dad had died a year before. And I'm like, for some reason, just, I knew someone whose CA125 was similar to mine, and she was 10 years older than me, but she had ovarian cancer. And so I was like, oh my God, I'm in trouble. And sure enough, I woke up and I looked at my friend who is my anesthesiologist, and I said, is it cancer? He said, yeah, it is. I mean, he was as white as the wall. And so was every doctor that worked in the room. So it was kind of on my radar just because of my friend who I knew had gone to these doctors, and I was kind of going to some of the same ones, but I really didn't think it was ovarian. I mean, I would have never thought of ovarian cancer.
Sure. And so then what was the prognosis at that point?
Well, I woke up and he said, the gynec said, well, it's stage 3C. I didn't know what that meant, but I do know 1, 2, 3, 4,
right.
ABC. So I knew it wasn't good. He said it had spread to my omentum, and I was going to need chemo, and I'd meet with the medical oncologist tomorrow. Like, okay. And you just do what they tell you. It's such a shock. My daughters were seniors in high school. My son was 12 studying for his bar mitzvah. I needed to be around. So whatever they told me to do, I was going to do, whether I wanted to or not.
Got it. So your courage really came thinking about your children. I mean, was that a big push for you?
It was that. It was the fact that my dad passed away a year before and I needed to be strong for my mom. It wasn't even an option for it not to be okay. You know, I was the breadwinner at the time in my family. There just was no possible outcome that wasn't going to be good in my head, even though I was scared to death.
Sure. And then what took you from that point to starting to being one of the co-founders of the Be the Difference Foundation? I mean, some people get so inside their own heads that they can barely make it through the day. And then all of a sudden now you're going in and helping to co-found this organization.
So one of my friends who lived in Atlanta called me one day or reached out to me and said, Julie, I met this person in a taxi and she'd had ovarian cancer and I thought of you. And she said, there's this event here that people I know started, and it's a cycling event for ovarian cancer research, and we should do it in Dallas. I was like, cool. And that was kind of towards the end of my chemo, and, you know, honestly, I really hadn't had any adverse problems. I made every chemo, even when it was icing here, somebody made sure we got there, and the doctors, you know, I never missed it. And so it was almost done, and on Mother's Day, we have a bagel run at the JCC. And John Mize, who now is our director of Will Survive, he was the athletic director there. And I knew him through lots of different things. And I went up to him and I go, John, we have to do this ride. It's called Ovarian Cycle. We need to do it here. And he said, you're the third person who said that to me. I think we need to listen.
Wow.
So met with the higher ups at the J, and for the first time ever, they said, we need to do something for someone besides us. This is important to our community, and we want to do this. So they offered to have it and be the venue. And so we did our event. We worked with them, and it was great. We changed it up a little bit. And once we were done, we were hoping for 100 riders and $50,000. So that was pretty good. And we knew where we wanted the money to go. And the three of us worked on it together because we each came to them. And so we're all survivors. And so we said, we'll do it together. And so we're going to do about 100 people, $50,000. It will be amazing. And we'll do it. Well, 3 weeks before, we were climbing on 200,000 and 200 riders.
Wow.
And then by the time we did the event, we had 300 riders and we raised $300,000. And when it was over, people kept saying, what can we do? How can we help? What can we do? And we had no place to do anything. We did this one event and that was it. So we looked at each other and we said, maybe we should start our own foundation. And I had, through this whole process, I had met a woman who was like a 15-year survivor. And she was not part of the Jewish community, which the JCC, you know, has a lot, obviously it's a Jewish organization, but you don't have to be Jewish to belong. Anyway, I called her and I said, first of all, she didn't want to do the run, but she did it. And she got her whole family involved. And I called her after and I said, you need to do this with us. And she said, I do. Because I knew when I got diagnosed, I was going to make a difference and this is it. And so that's kind of how it was born. And we sat around and we were trying to figure out the name. And Helen, one of the co-founders, she wore a bracelet that said, Be the Difference. Because she always wanted to make a difference because she fought this disease for 5 straight years before she passed away. And my team was Wheel to Survive, so we took on that name for the ride, and Be the Difference Foundation was born.
Fantastic. And I know you mentioned Helen.
Yes.
And how did her passing affect the organization, and did it put more fire behind what you're doing? What has happened in the years since her passing, which has been about 3.5 years or so.
2014.
Right.
And she died in August, and we had another friend who was involved with us, but she was fighting also, and she died 69 days later. Wow. And so I got the chills just thinking about it. Losing them was really, really hard. I don't think any, I mean, Helen, she was such a fighter. And so everything we do, we kind of say, but what would Helen say, you know? But her husband got on the board in her place, and he's been amazing. He's got a very good business mind. He thinks in her head, you know, knows her head, but he also thinks outside of the box. And so he's helped us, I really think, to keep her as part of us. us, and she is part of us. We talk about her all the time, and just wish to God that we could have found something for her.
Right.
And in her merit, we will help to be the difference somehow, some way, and we have already. Maybe not finding a cure, but we're finding things that have been published. Someone reached out to me 2 weeks ago and said, I just want to let you know you saved another life. I'm like, what? Yeah. She said, I read everything you post. My sister-in-law was telling me all these things, and I said, you need to go to ask about your ovaries. And she said, well, I've been to this doctor and this doctor and this doctor almost a year. She had 22 pounds of tumor and fluid when they took it out, and she was stage 3 or 4 ovarian cancer. And she wouldn't have done that. She wouldn't have pushed for that had we not been out there and talking about this all the time. Nobody talks about it.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say nobody, because there are groups. I mean, just in Colorado, they've got a wonderful group. Okay. Wonderful. But, you know, ovarian cancer is very small compared to so many other cancers. So, you know, one, you have to be a woman. And two, you have to know your body, and you have to know what to tell your doctor, because if you don't, that's not going to be the first place to go, because there's so many other things. It could be IBS, or, you know, gastric issues of some sort, or colon issues. They don't look at your ovaries. And your ovaries, like somebody was talking about the other day, and she was like, the reason so many of these symptoms are what they are is because once your ovaries get so swollen and with the cancer and everything, they put so much pressure on everything in your abdomen. Totally makes sense. Your bladder and your colon, and then that it's, you get distended because it's growing and things like that, which makes you tired and full and all the things that are symptomatic of ovarian cancer.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, in my own case, with my mom, you know, I lost my mom to ovarian cancer as well, which is what connected me with your organization. And, you know, she was stage 4 when it was discovered, and they actually fought, the doctors fought the prognosis for a while, because they were like, oh no, we think you have breast cancer. I mean, it was insane what went on. And so the education piece, I think, is so important. And I know that when I looked at a lot of, after my mother passed away, you know, there's just this need to do something, help somehow, so that other families don't have to have such a huge loss. And I would love for you to share the difference in the Be the Difference Foundation from other organizations, because I know there are a number of organizations throughout the country. But there was just something about yours, which I would love for you to share more than me, about what it is, why you guys are so unique.
Well, I think one of the things that makes us different, we're started by survivors for survivors and for families. And we, our goal is to help women either find better treatment options, find ways to get to clinical trials, to be a source, but to, the money that we raise, we don't keep, we donate. And so we look for places that are doing something where we could be, maybe our $25,000 is the catalyst that makes it work. Or we get, there's a group that we donate to called Lazarex Foundation, which is in Northern California, and they help people get to clinical trials. Well, we donate to them specifically for women with ovarian cancer. Like 8 women got to clinical trials last year that they wouldn't have been able to go to. So it's different. And we do some things similar to others. A lot of people are looking for screening and early detection. And unfortunately, there's so much money thrown at that, and it's not there. However, here, there's a woman at UT Southwestern, and she's a PhD, and she's got something that one of our doctors felt like, this is different than everyone else through the blood. And so we supported that, because that piece could make a huge difference, you know, at the end of the day, and help people to get diagnosed earlier, have better outcomes and all that kind of stuff.
You know, and is there anything happening legislatively with, I know one of the things that just upsets me in the process is like to go and get a CA-125 test during your normal, you know, annual exams is not covered by insurance because it's unnecessary. Do you know if there's anything happening in those areas?
I think, well, there's two schools of thought on the CA-125. Some say it's not a good, test, and we shouldn't do it unless we suspect, and that there's so many false positives, and the only way to know that it's not a brain cancer is to go have a hysterectomy and all that. Well, you know what? You have a mammogram, and it can be a false positive or a false negative too, so you're not going to have a mammogram. In my personal opinion, and this is just me, I think everybody should have one to just have a baseline. Right. So if you start having weird stuff happen, have a CA-125. But and I have twin daughters, they're 25. I've talked to four different doctors, two gynecs and two OB-GYNs. Two think that the CA-125 is important for them to do now, and two don't.
Wow.
So it's very strange to me, but and I get it. Like for Helen, for example, her CA-125 was always within the normal range. If it went up 2 points, she knew something was wrong. So granted, it's in the normal range, but the movement made sense. For me, mine absolutely was an indicator. And my doctor basically says now, as long as your CA-125 is within the same, couple of points, I'm not worried about you. But not everybody looks at it that way. And then for younger women, like women, I'm BRCA positive, and my daughters, they, do we do that for them? Well, there's 2 weeks of the month that CA-125 is going to go up no matter what because of ovulation and all that. So you have to know when to go and have the test. But again, these two doctors who believe in it say, okay, we just pick the time to do it. But we just keep an eye on them. One of them went to her OB-GYN the other day, had transvaginal ultrasound baseline. They charged her crazy for that. My doctor is part of my appointment because he was a high-risk specialist. He did it anyway. But they charged her extra to have that test, which I think is disgusting.
Right.
But I think, now I also think it's horrible that they're saying not to get a mammogram until you're like 50. Stupid. I mean, how many women do we know who've had breast cancer, right, even in high school? I mean, it's mm-hmm. just... it. Granted, it's expensive and all that kind of stuff, but save a life?
You bet.
Seems like a no-brainer to me. But I'm thinking about going to the OCRFA conference in July, which is in D.C. Every other year they go to D.C. and they go kind of pound the pavement on the hill because I'd like to see really where their thinking is and stuff.
Got it. And where are you at with the disease at this point in time?
Where am I? Currently?
Yes. Yes.
I'm 7 years cancer free. Nice. I was diagnosed in 2010, in October of 2010. My last chemo was April of 2011, and no recurrences.
Fantastic.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
That's awesome.
So very, very lucky.
So since founding the organization, have you seen any movement in finding a cure or moving towards a better solution for those diagnosed?
Since we started doing what we do, we make sure that there are clinical trials here in Dallas at one of the cancer centers. But they were doing some that we fund specifically ovarian. And I know someone right now doing a clinical trial there that 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when I asked my doctor about, what about these immunology things, immunization type things, he's like, they don't work. Well, they're starting to. So we're seeing that change. There was just recently, I saw it somewhere that we donate money to University of Pennsylvania to a specific doctor there who's doing stuff with T-cells. And his study, his name actually was on this paper of it being something, and I can't remember exactly all the details on it, but once I saw his name, I was like, oh my God, we helped with that. Even if it was this much, we helped. So yeah, I am seeing it, and the numbers are the same, but the awareness is definitely better. And I'm seeing Sharshara and Force and other groups that were primarily breast starting to really talk about the ovarian piece. One of my friends just got a job with the cancer, hereditary cancer test or something. It's not really for breast and ovarian cancer, but for other types of cancer. And she said, I'm learning about it. Can you tell me more about ovarian cancer? And she's a breast cancer survivor, because they don't even, a lot of them don't know. It's just, this boggles my mind. Right. But there's more genes to test for. So for example, if you're not BRCA1 or 2, there are 28 genes that they can test for abnormalities, and a lot of them are related to ovarian cancer. So you may have one of those, not BRCA. And that's a huge change. Just that one test, that whole genetic testing piece has changed in 7 years.
Fantastic. So I know that we've got the Wheel to Survive ride coming up here in May 20th here in Denver. And anything you want to share about that before we say goodbye?
I tell you what, I had never been on a spin bike before we did the first ride, and I was scared to death of it, and I think I nearly fell off the first time. But there was someone who rode in Houston, and she was so funny. She goes, this is the best event because I can ride however I am, and I'm never at the back. You know, I'm always, you're doing it for yourself. And it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be in a brand new facility. It's entertaining. It's purposeful. And everyone who comes says, oh my God, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. This is the best thing I've ever done. It's kind of like apprehensive. And yes, we ask you to raise money, but $250 is not a very big fundraising goal. A lot of these big walks and things, you have to raise thousands. We ask each rider to raise $250. Nice. It's a pretty easy ask if you just say why you're doing it. Even at $5, it's amazing how quickly. My kids raised, I think they each raised over $1,000. Their boyfriends raised over $1,000. You know, it's not hard, and it's so much fun. It's so worth it to be there.
Well, fantastic. I'm going to be riding in it, and I am looking forward to riding with you. And
thank you, me too.
I just want to thank you for all your work and your courage to keep moving when, you know, again, as I said earlier, many people just, it floors them and stops them from moving forward. And one thing I want to say about the clinical trials is that my mom, she, you know, we lost her. She had it for 3 years. She fought it for 3 years, but the clinical trials gave us those 3 years. She would have never, she was, again, she was stage four, no hope. But the clinical trials gave us 3 years with her that were the most precious gift we could have ever been given. And so again, thank you for
so
your work in that area. Yeah.
Thank you, Sherry. It's so fun that we met through Wheel to Survive, and you came to San Francisco to see what we were doing, and that we're now doing it in Denver because we talked about it back then.
Yeah.
I'm so excited, and I think it will be great. And anyone who hears this or sees this podcast, come on out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not hard. You can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it.
Exactly. Me too. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks, Sherry.
I hope that Julie's words here today have inspired you to think differently when faced with life-changing situations. We have the choice. We can either dig deep and use the courage that each of us have inside of us, or we can wimp out. And when we wimp out, no one wins. If you would like to learn more about the Be the Difference organization, you can do so at BeTheDifferenceFoundation.org. Again, that's BeTheDifferenceFoundation.org. And for those of you hearing this before May 20th, 2018, come ride with us here in Denver and or donate to this great cause. You can do that at our special website at pedalgirls, P-E-D-A-L, pedalgirls.org. And at that page, you can also find 50% off registration for the ride. There's a coupon code at the bottom of the page, so please check that out. And again, the choice is yours to either come ride, come cheer us too. We'd love to have people come cheer us in the ride as well. And that's going to be at Rush Cycle in Denver. So here's to standing up when you get knocked down and being the difference for yourself and those whose lives you touch. If you've enjoyed this episode, please go to the Apple Podcast page for The Courage to Be the Difference and give it an awesome rating. And be sure to pass this episode on to at least one person who you think really needs to hear it. This is Sherry Ruskus of the Victory Circle signing off for this episode of The Courage to Be the Difference. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.